Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our Patreon supporters, this is your extended ad-free version of the show. And thank you to some of the most beautiful patrons in the world, which include Guy West MacDonald, Alex McQuilkin, Phil D, and Matt Dawson-Jones, as well as everyone who's listening to us live. And we have a huge room of people listening to us in our Discord, and everyone is supporting us directly. Thank you. You can get access to our full-length ad-free show, our Patreon-exclusive weekly sister show, Extra Message, and all the stuff that we bang on about every single week. But loads of people enjoy it, so I feel we have a point. And you can find out more at patreon.com/UK Tech. Sorry for the absence of episodes, or episi. If you wish.
Episodes.
For the last couple of weeks. I think we explained it fairly well in our Patreon extra message that went out, that basically the news borders, and so we didn't want to do one. There's no beating around the bush with Ian and I. If the news is tedious and we don't have anything to say about it, we don't do a show. Amazon has opened its first cashierless grocery store in the UK. I went to check it out in person. And I'll come to my experiences, or experience, if you will.
No! Not that!
In a few minutes.
For God's sakes.
So Amazon opened this cashierless convenience store. It's the first time that the company's using its automated checkout technology beyond the shores of the US of A. It's over in Ealing, in West London, my old stomping ground, where I lived for 5 years. And much like the US version of the store, that is, not of Ealing, it is a small, fairly small convenience store. It's your typical kind of Tesco, Metro, Sainsbury's local type store, a 7-Eleven, as they would call it in the US, or maybe in Japan. And it uses an array of cameras and sensors that track you as you walk around the store. I was told actually by someone at Amazon in that store when I went to visit it that particular one has about 100 of those cameras and sensors in total. And so as you take stuff from a shelf and put it in a bag or in your pocket, it's automatically logged, including if you put it back on the shelf, and then you just walk out. You know, there's no checkout. It's not even like that Sainsbury's one that we talked about a couple of years ago, if you remember, Ian, where you go in and you scan the Sainsbury's, is it the Nectar card app? You had to scan it.
Yeah.
And it was sort of technically cashierless and checkout free, but it still took longer than if there was just a self-service kiosk or something. This is literally, you load the Amazon app on your phone, on your way in, you press a button, it brings this little QR code up. You scan it just the same as if you were going on some public transport with an Oyster card or any NFC system. It lets you in. That's when the cameras log you are you. And then for the rest of the time, it's able to just follow you as you're going around the store. And it is quite disconcerting to just put stuff in your pocket or in a bag, as I did in this case, and just walk out. But I have to say, and we'll come to opinions on Amazon in a sec, because I'm sure there are lots of viewpoints here. Purely as far as the technology goes, it works extremely well. So I went in, I did a little tour, walked around. I picked a bag for sale. They were like a pound, one of the reusable carrier bags. And I just went around and just picked a few things off the shelf. I took 4 cookies, freshly baked cookies, so they weren't pre-packed or anything. 3 of them were chocolate chip. 1 of them was like a double chocolate chip, because I thought, oh, maybe I can confuse it by taking 2 chocolate chip cookies at once with one hand, then going back for another one, then getting a chocolate one. I also wanted 4 cookies because it was for work, so diets don't apply, right? put those in my bag. I got some polos because they were like a tiny little tiny little packet. I thought, I wonder if it'll see that if I put my hand over it and take it away. And then I got a drink and some like a hot sausage roll or something, like a few bits and pieces. It came to about £10, and I was trying to trick it. Like, I wasn't trying to steal the products as much as I was just trying to experiment with the technology. And then I walked out, and I got the bill the next day. So it didn't come immediately.
Oh, that's quite lengthy.
Yeah, it came the next day, but every item was spot on. It had got the three cookies. It had got the one extra chocolate chip. It had got the polos. It had got everything absolutely right. And from that side of things, I'm very impressed. And it definitely is faster than using a self-service checkout, without question.
Why do you think it took so long?
Well, it uses machine learning, I'm told, to make its decision. And I do wonder, and I'm going to try and find this out, if there is any, say, if there's a confidence rating that the system has as to whether it thinks, okay, we definitely know with above 95% certainty that that particular person took these products. If there's any doubt, maybe it goes to a human who reviews the footage. And this does open a whole can of worms from a privacy standpoint. And for what it's worth, I will not be shopping at this store in future because I don't think I need this kind of thing in my life. But I do wonder if that's one of the ways it deals with it. But I had to say that the experience was completely seamless. It is exactly as advertised. And from that side of things, it's quite impressive.
Well, I am interested in this from a technological point of view. And like you said, I mean, presumably part of the terms and conditions of going into the store is that you agree to be videoed. I mean, presumably, once you've agreed to it, it won't let you in until you've agreed to the terms and conditions in the app. That was a question I had for you, by the way. Is it just a regular Amazon app? Does it automatically know when you're nearby and pop up a message or something?
It didn't pop up if I was nearby, but it is just the regular Amazon app. So I had to install it because I didn't have it on my phone in the first place.
So what do you do? Do you just? Is there a place you go specifically in the app, or do you just? Scan a barcode as you would, you know, using the app normally.
Basically, you just pull the app up and you press a little button. It's like I think it's a checkout icon. And then there's a line that says fresh code, or Amazon fresh code or something. You press that and it just puts a QR code on the screen, and you use that to scan at the little entranceway, and the door opens and you go in, and that's it. So because I'm sure most people who shop at Amazon and use it on their phone have probably got the app, it's very seamless. It's not like the Sainsbury's one where you had to download a separate app and log in and all that sort of stuff. It's right there on your app. There's no, I would genuinely say it is a two-tap process from opening the app to being able to go in, which is pretty good. A couple of other things to note about the store. The first thing is that it is in every way a regular convenience store. It sells anything that you can imagine ever wanting on the way home from work, whether that's food, whether that's kitchen items, toilet paper, a ready meal, drinks, hot drinks, coffees, all that sort of stuff. I did notice that they sold Kindles, which is perhaps unsurprising, but again,
I'd say very unsurprising.
But it's the same deal. You just take it off the shelf and walk out, which is I just think psychologically raises a whole bunch of interesting questions. It also has alcohol, where, again, you take the alcohol off the shelf and walk out. However, there is a person standing next to where the alcohol bit is, and their job is to check your ID to make sure you're over 18 when you enter the area.
Right. So you can't steal your parents' phone and use their app and walk out with booze.
No, because there is somebody standing next to that to check your ID. I didn't notice at first because this person that was a gentleman in when I was there, I didn't notice because I just assumed it was just someone standing next to the wall. So I just walked in and started looking at the alcohol. But when I walked out, I did notice that he had an Amazon badge on. So I asked him if that was his job, and he said yes for ID. So he just saw that I was over 18 when I walked in, and that was it. I mean, it's interesting. I'm not a massive fan of Amazon moving into the high street I think it's a lot of the feedback, in fact, on a video that I made for Bloomberg, and it went nuts. It went kind of viral, actually, over the last couple of days. I think at the last count, it's had about 160,000 views, and some of the comments underneath it are, I mean, it's predominantly along the topics of job security, why is Amazon in the high street? Isn't it ironic how Amazon killed the high street, and then when everything shut during COVID, it snapped up some cheap real estate to open a store? All things like that. And I think
there's nothing ironic about that. That's Amazon's business model. It's always been Amazon's business model.
That just seems to be the predominant, the dominant theory.
Well, what do people expect? They were the ones that made Amazon billion, trillionaires.
They are saying they're going to license this technology. Nick just pointed this out in Discord. And it's true. The technology is called Just Walk Out, and it will make it available to other supermarkets. I don't think that is in any way a magnanimous thing, or in any way trying to see off anti-competition scrutiny ahead of anything, because I don't think that's central to this working. Amazon could very easily open a store with checkouts if it wanted to, so I don't think it's central to that. But I do imagine that there'll be a cost involved, whether that's a financial one or a data one or a customer information one, who knows. But it is true. It's not going to limit this just to its own stores. But I also think, and John raises this, I see in our chat as well, I also think, isn't it an interesting idea that during the pandemic, people have got very used to ordering online, maybe people who didn't previously buy online and went to the store. And it is during that period that everyone has moved online that Amazon chose this moment to go into the brick and mortar world of retail for groceries.
I don't think there's any surprise at all in the way that Amazon operates. It's the same model that all massive American companies operate under, in that, you know, they'll undercut everyone until they're the biggest and everyone else has sort of gone out of business, and then they'll increase their prices to whatever they want and we won't be able to do a thing about it. We've always known this was coming. It's not a
surprise. Well, we can do something about it. You just don't shop at Amazon if you don't.
Yeah,
like,
that's
it.
Right. But realistically, is that going to be a thing?
Yeah, I think people will. I mean,
people might, but they're still going to go where it's cheapest, aren't they? For one thing, they might not have any choice. You know, if they don't have a lot of money and Amazon is the cheapest, then they're going to go with Amazon, aren't they? The problem is that, you know, I mean, Amazon is so big now, it can basically afford to do whatever it wants anywhere. There's very little we can do to stop them.
Afford to do what they want, and being allowed to because of anti-competition and regulatory concern are definitely two different things. You know, we have good regulation in this country for competition. At least we have active regulation for it. I don't want to get too much into tax, but
no, but it's a really important point, and you can't ignore the taxation issue when that's a huge part of their business model. Like, all of it is down to the fact that Amazon doesn't really pay tax, not at the rate it should, at least. Neither does Facebook. You know, most companies don't pay tax at what I would consider to be the fair rate. And smaller businesses are getting squeezed even harder because corporation tax will go up. If you were a business, they just announced this in the budget, if you're a business that makes more than 50 grand a year, I think it's 50 grand, something like that, your corporation tax rate is going to go up. But Amazon won't be paying 25% corporation tax. I absolutely guarantee you that. So, you know, if we want to do something about this, then making Amazon pay tax would be the really, really the cornerstone of starting, and not letting them run it out of Luxembourg would be, you know, tip top.
If you have a view on Amazon or the cashierless store, have you been? Any views on that, of course, welcome. uktechshow@icloud.com is where you can send those opinions, or send them to us on the Twitters @textmessagepod.
Nate, do you watch any Amazon Prime TV?
I watched The Grand Tour.
Okay. Have you watched anything recently?
I watched The Grand Tour quite recently.
Well, you need to have seen basically... Well, yeah. So basically, I was on Twitter moaning about this, but they've started to put pre-roll ads before everything. So if you're watching a series, one episode after the other, you get a pre-roll ad for another Amazon show every time you get to the end of one and start a new one.
I mean, that makes me want to throw things out of a window.
Yeah, it makes me want to throw things out of a window too. I will be writing about it next week. I hope someone from Amazon's listening and can activate the PR team, because
I know for a fact people from Amazon do listen to this.
Oh, well, then I'd love if they hear this before I've written the the article.
When you're writing it, because I scan your bio on T3 when I do the show notes to make sure.
I've got a Facebook piece coming that I've been working on. I mean, I wouldn't have said it's a deep expose or anything like that, but I have sought quotations from them and tried to do the best job I possibly can with it, because I feel like it's an important issue. And the same with Amazon. I will ask them about this, but this is much less of a serious issue, but it is really annoying, and I have had enough of it. I didn't realize it happened on Apple TV Plus, actually. That's weird.
I've seen that for Apple TV Plus, and it's bizarre, isn't it? It's like, convince me to want to watch something, and then once I've said okay, fine, I'll watch this,
try and convince you to watch something else.
How about you watch something else then? Like, yeah, what do you want? It's like a petulant little child that doesn't know what sweets to choose.
It's really annoying, and I mean, I do find it irritating, but Amazon sort of positions itself as sort of Prime Video is kind of like a freebie, isn't it? It doesn't really feel like you're paying for it, because you're paying for Prime anyway. Although I would say I don't use Prime that often, so realistically what I'm paying for is video, and that's why I don't cancel it, because otherwise I could just subscribe again when I felt like ordering something, couldn't I? But you know, I couldn't have had a conversation about Amazon without me getting angry about that, because it is really beginning to push my buttons.
The Guardian wrote this week that BBC Three will return as a broadcast channel next year, 5 years after it was dropped because the corporation argued its young viewers had abandoned terrestrial viewing. The BBC said the decision to bring the channel back, which will be in January 2022, had been made in an attempt to woo back those younger audiences who had turned away from the output. And if you remember, it was probably about 5 years ago now, the BBC Trust said that getting rid of BBC Three as a broadcast channel was because they had evidence that young people basically watch stuff online, and therefore what's the point in having a linear TV package that no one wanted to. And there was a lot of criticism. It was very heavily criticized at the time. There was a someone quoted in the Guardian story here, actually, Ash Atala, who produced People Just Do Nothing, which was a BBC Three hit, and I think is MD of Rough Cut, which may have probably made that show, actually produced it. He said in 2014 that the decision to make BBC Three online only was as if, quote, a 60-year-old man wearing a golf jumper just walked into a really good nightclub and turned the music off, which I thought was a great way of putting it. And at the time, part of the reason was to save money. And maybe it's worth us recapping a little bit of the history of BBC Three's relationship with streaming, because it has got a quite storied past. It'd probably make quite a good subject for a BBC Three fly on the wall documentary, could be, I think. Do you want to talk a bit about the history, Ian?
Even further back than you're talking about here, obviously, BBC Three, I want to say BBC Three was the original digital channel that they launched, because it was originally called BBC Choice.
Yeah.
Obviously the idea of that was to, you know, you make use of the digital spectrum that they'd come across, and to make, you know, to take advantage of the fact they had now more space than they previously had for channels, because in the analog era there was only space for five. But with digital, of course, they could fit hundreds of channels on at ultra low bit rates, making it quite annoying to watch. So yeah, after things went digital, they launched BBC Four and changed Choice to Three. And obviously have a 24-hour news channel, which was not a thing. It wasn't a thing in the UK. Obviously, it was a thing internationally, because, you know, BBC World News has existed for a long time. But yeah, so, you know, it was just part of that rush to be digital. And of course, that's somewhat pre-streaming. I mean, you could watch things on the internet before this, but not in particularly good quality.
BBC Three, it's worth pointing out, has spawned some extremely popular shows. Gavin and Stacey was a BBC Three. Fleabag was BBC Three. This Country, Torchwood, People Just Do Nothing. Like, it's got an amazing hit rate. And of shows that are of international appeal, which isn't always the case even for stuff on BBC One. But BBC Three's got a great track record. And it was Tony Hall, then Director General. Is he still Director General? Has he left now?
No, I think he's gone, hasn't he?
Yeah, I thought so. Anyway, announced in March 2014 that the channel was going to be moved from terrestrial to iPlayer, but it also had its budget slashed massively, well over half. It was like $85 million down to about £25 million a year, and that was he justified it as being a financially necessary cost-cutting move because the BBC needed to save a load of money, and it still raises the question of okay, well if BBC Three needs more money and can come back to terrestrial, there's still a finite budget that the BBC has to operate within. So is something else up for the chop? Because BBC Three is now back in the BBC's good graces. I mean, BBC Four has always been rumoured to be kind of a risk of being
cut.
Yeah,
but BBC Four is the most BBC thing the BBC does.
It's the best. It's the best.
So getting rid of BBC Four would be a mistake, a massive one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the cost of running the channel is realistically. I mean, bearing in mind it's a frequency share with BBC. You know, BBC Four and BBC Three both shared spectrum with CBeebies and CBBC. So the kids' channels run till seven, and then the adults' channels take over the spectrum. So there's not a, it's probably not a massive amount of cost. There'll be some extra transmission costs, I guess, in terms of, you know, having to run a separate channel probably involves some element of separate hardware, although I don't even know if that's true, because in this day everything comes off a server anyway. So realistically, what's the cost of putting a few extra files on a server and telling it where to go at what time? It's probably negligible. I think that the problem is you have to fill all that schedule with original programming, which is quite expensive. And then you have to have people, much far greater numbers of people involved in the commissioning. And of course, as soon as it becomes a TV channel, not a streaming channel, it then is inherently something that generates more interest in management terms. Like you could run a streaming channel quite easily and say, you know, I'll just do what you want. Doesn't matter. You know, it's streaming. Whereas a TV channel is a TV channel, and while the actual reality is that those two things are identical, it still just is different. It will just have a different opinion held about it. It's like the fact that newspapers are still a thing. There's no reason for newspapers to be a thing. There's no reason to print out news on trees. You know, that could be delivered just as easily online. It's just the fact that that's how
I would have to argue that there is an amazing set of reasons to print news on trees.
Yes,
not exclusively.
No, but what does a tree printed out thing get you that a tablet and a subscription to The Guardian doesn't?
Accusations that it's too expensive or it's limited to the elites. That distribution can't be as wide, accountability is not as good because you can't physically go back and delete a piece of printed paper. It's harder to archive in libraries. You know, there are 1,000 reasons to still print it on trees. I'm not saying it should only be printed on trees.
No. And I mean, it's a bit of a silly argument, isn't it? But I mean, like, do you think that every newspaper ever printed has been successfully archived?
I don't think every single one, but I think certainly of the mainstream tabloids and broadsheets, yeah, they all get archived in the British Library. They had miles of shelving every single year.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, definitely. I mean, that definitely is a thing, but you could see it going wrong. But yeah, all right. I mean, fair enough. But
I feel sort of much like a badly lined up piece of live streaming video. We have drifted a little bit here.
Yes.
So let's just conclude that BBC Three is moving back to terrestrial at a point that people are still increasingly enjoying non-linear streaming services. So it won't surprise me if in a year or 2 years' time, we have this conversation again about how it's moving online only because no one's watching it again.
Maybe they should launch it in 4K and it should be the 4K channel. And then just be like BBC HD was back in the day. And then it can simulcast anything that's on BBC 1, 2 or 4 that happens to be in 4K. And the rest of the time, its schedule is its own to fill with, you know, relevant youth programming.
If you have an opinion on the aforementioned, do send us a message, uktechshow@icloud.com. If you live in a newspaper archive, how many newspapers have you seen interned at said archive? Let us know.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup, topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/UK Tech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
I think it's time to hear what's been happening in the wider world of tech over the last week or so, because Tom Merritt has been keeping us abreast while I've been, well, just not doing a podcast. Here's Tom.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, a laser can generate random numbers faster, which is great for cryptography. Microsoft Ignite happens, and Microsoft announces a play to become the platform for mixed reality headsets. Google announces plans to replace third-party cookies with something called cohorts, so targeting you as a group of like-minded people. It's got good and bad things about it. Kings of Leon release an album as a non-fungible token, very 2021 of them. And Twitter might have an undo send option soon. All that and much more at dailytechnewsshow.com.
Should we start doing non-fungible tokens for the podcast?
That was what we were talking about earlier. That's what it is. That's the thing that you said where they're selling the tweet. That's the non-fungible thing.
I know
thing.
It is. It's just that we weren't recording at that point and now we are. So I'm raising it like a yeast.
Oh, well, no, we were recording. Well, I was recording anyway. I'm pretty sure I was recording. I don't know. It's one way of getting money. Would anyone buy an episode of his show? I think that's an interesting idea. Shall we sell an episode of the show?
No, I have no interest in doing that, nor do I want to have a Substack, nor do I use Clubhouse. If you have opinions that are different to those, then do let us know. UKTechShow@iCloud.com is where you can send your messages. Thank you, Tom, for sending us a promo. Also, on the Patreon version of the show this week, we had a deep and, may I say, fascinating discussion about, I suppose how strange I am for getting to the end of each billing period of my 4G contract and trying to use up all the data in any way possible, so I feel like I've got my money's worth. Apparently, that's quite odd. But if you want to hear that discussion, that's available to you by going to patreon.com/UKTech and becoming a member. And thank you to all those who either do or will do. Ian, you look as beautiful as ever in this video version.
Thanks.
It's lovely to see your...
I'm not wild about it.
...smiling face. Are you wearing trousers? Because I can't see them. Good Lord, he is.
Yes. He is. But it's winter.
It is.
Why wouldn't I be wearing trousers in the winter?
It's a good point. And I'm going to celebrate not wearing trousers by turning off the podcast and getting dressed. Toodle-pip, everybody.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.